So I'm here with Chris Eisenberg. I'm interviewing Chris because he's about to star in a performance called Frank and Me for West Coast Black Theater Troupe, a production which he also wrote, created, is starring in. I guess did everything there is to do to make it happen. So I want to talk about Frank and Me, but I always start by asking just one question. So my question is, do you remember the very first time in your life when singing, music, dancing, performing, any of that talked to you, called you, drew you, became interesting to you?
Yeah, I do remember very vividly. The first time really was when I was in elementary school. My mom did a really good job at keeping music around and in my life. A lot of music was being played in the car all the time on long drives. And a lot of music was just being played, period, in the house. Everywhere was music. So I credit her for that. But a time where I really felt like it was something that moved me to become a musician was when I was in elementary school and I signed up for the talent show at kindergarten. And the school had, their annual talent shows. And when I got on stage, I didn't even sing or anything. I got on stage and I dribbled a basketball and I did tricks with the basketball and spun it on my fingers and did all that type of stuff. And I realized, you had the power to make people kind of forget what they're going through, forget any hardships they're going through in their life, and kind of it kind of felt like a superpower to me. Just for that 3 minutes or 4 minutes, people forgot about their day and they were smiling and nothing else mattered. So that was really palpable and something that I do remember vividly as like a 4 or 5 year old realizing, like, huh, like that's really cool. I can make these people kind of forget about what they were going through today. So that was really something that made me drawn to that profession. And it made me realize I had the gift to do that.
So the first recognition that you might be a performer was this sense that you could have an impact on the people who were watching you. I think that's quite unusual for a boy. So that's a pretty interesting awareness for a child, and I think pretty profound and powerful. I can have an impact on what other people are thinking, feeling, experiencing. I think that's pretty powerful stuff. So, but it was this basketball tricking that you were doing. So when did music become a part of that?
Right. So there was a movie. And just to preface, I don't think it was as profound of a thought when I was 4 or 5. I think it was more of a kind of just like a kid. It wasn't as deep of a thought. When I saw the people's expression, it wasn't me thinking, oh, I can change the lives of people. It was more so that these people are smiling and liking what I'm doing, and the girls are smiling,
I think that,
and
I'm sure that's right, that is what a child would experience, right? Like, that's great. Okay,
right.
so you had that.
And then it transformed. Yeah, it transformed into becoming that I could help people forget about their lives. But I'd say the music came in, I was dribbling the basketball and there was music going on, and I was kind of There was a movie out called Like Mike, and I think it came out in around 2002, 2003. And it was a movie about basketball and this kid who found shoes that were magic shoes, and he put them on and he could fly like Michael Jordan. And that soundtrack, it was a rap soundtrack and it was very popular. And so when I did the tricks, I was doing it to the song. It's called Basketball. And it's like a little rap song. And I think really it's always been there, the music. And then, that was kindergarten. Then first grade, I think that's when I started singing. I think I sang an Usher song that was a bit too explicit for the school. So they kind of freaked out a little bit. But yeah, music has just always been something that I would doing my pastime at school, I'd be singing and people would be like, oh my God, you're always singing. You're always dancing and tapping on the desk. But I'd say it really started to become a part of my life when I joined the theater when I was about
Yeah.
9 or 10 years old.
So what triggered that? How come you became a part of the theater?
Right. So my mother, she worked at a place called Community Youth Development, and one of her students that would come and do her after school program, he had a brother in town who was apparently a great music producer, and this guy knew that, you know, my mom's son loved music, so he was like, yo, like, I want to put you and my brother in touch because I know your son loves to do music. So he put my mother and his brother EJ Porter in touch. And I met EJ and we started initially kind of recording music. He was just trying to see if I had, you know, a spark or something there that was, you know, worth taking a shot for the music. And once we met, he was like, you know, you'd be perfect for Nate Jacobs. He's always looking for new talent. And he's doing a great job with a theater company. I want to put you in touch. So that's what he did. And Mr. Jacobs met me initially and thought I was a little too young to be in shows and, you know, be committed to being a theater worker. And he'll tell you a little bit better than me, but I think he could tell that I was hungry for an opportunity to start in music. And he said, look, you know, if you'll bring him to extra rehearsals, I'd love to cast him as little Michael Jackson. And you know, he'll come out and do 5 songs. And that's exactly what happened. So when I was 9 or 10 years old, he kind of really just taught me the ropes and showed me the initial skill set that you need to be on stage. And yeah, we did the show. We probably did 25 to 30 shows of that. And I did my 5 songs, got off stage, and I watched the rest of the show from a side. And that's really where it started. I got to see great performers, grown men go on stage and make people smile and laugh and dance. And, you know, it was great. It was great
And you
exposure, great experience.
were great as little Michael Jackson. I saw you. So
Thank you.
you were
Thank you.
great.
Yeah, thank you.
And so then you
Yes,
became
exactly.
a part of the troupe and
Yep.
continued to expand both your skill and your roles. And so when did you begin to think about branching out, being more than just part of WBTT?
Right, so that happened fairly quickly as well. So I was 9 or 10 when I started, and then I did, you know, 2 years with the theater. I was in different shows. My voice hadn't yet broken. I hadn't yet gone through puberty, so I was always singing the Michael Jackson songs. I was kind of known for that as just the youngest member who sang Michael Jackson. And then at 12 years old, I remember being in sixth grade at my school in the computer lab, and I saw an audition for America's Got Talent was coming to Orlando. And something in my spirit just was like, man, you got to go do this. Like, this is a good chance to branch out, like you said, and become more than just, you know, a theater performer and also work on your skills of being a recording artist. So, yeah, I took that leap. At first, my parents weren't gonna let me go to audition for America's Got Talent. My grades were a bit subpar, so they were hesitant. But Mr. Jacobs really stuck up for me, and he was like, look, you know, if this little kid is feeling an inclination to go do this in his spirit, then you should trust that and let him go. So luckily enough, my parents and my folks were, you know, trusting of Mr. Jacobs enough to let me go. And we ended up what ended up meaning to be a kind of lesson in being humbled turned into me making it past all these rounds and them asking me to come back and come back and come back. And eventually I made it to all the way to the top 48 of that show at only 12 years old in like sixth grade. So I think that was really the moment where I felt that we gained confidence in the fact that this could work. You know, this could be a, you know, people like this. I got invited to Vegas. I got invited to Los Angeles to, you know, perform on NBC in front of millions of people on a live television show. So I think that was the time where we gained the confidence to know that, you know, the theater wouldn't be the only place that I would excel, you know?
Okay, so just catch me up. What beside Frank and me, what else is going on in your life in terms of your career?
Yeah, so a lot. In 2017, I signed with to Sony Records to be a part of a R&B boy band, and I moved to LA in 2017.
How
And
old were you?
I was 19 when I moved to LA. That was February of 2017. It was right after I graduated high school. And I moved there and we started this journey. It was me. It's a five-guy group, including me. And we started on, you know, TikTok and social media and YouTube. And we quickly gained we amassed just a huge following in a very short time, up to 800,000 subscribers on YouTube, almost a million subscribers and followers on TikTok. So we were doing that for a long time. And then in 2019, we signed to RCA Records, and we got a record deal and we put out music, we shot videos. And then obviously, you know, COVID happened in 2020. So everything kind of came up to a bit of a halt. But in the meantime, since 2020, I've been working a lot on my solo music. I recently signed a solo recording deal with Range Music, who's distributed by Capitol Records. And Frank and Me, that's pretty much it. So I have a lot of things on my plate. I have the group, I have my solo music, and I have this new Sinatra journey that we're about to go on now. So.
All right, so let's talk about that. Where did the impetus to do the Frank Sinatra thing come? What, how did that evolve?
Yeah. So Frank has always been a part of my life. Weirdly, I think like it just speaks to me having an old soul. He was my grandmother's favorite artist, you know, as he is a lot of our grandparents and parents. And unfortunately, I never got to meet my grandmother. She passed a couple months before I was born, but she lives on heavily through our family. They're really good at talking about her and bringing her memories to light, you know, showing footage and showing pictures. So she was always a part of my life, even though she had passed. And her love for Frank was so apparent. She had all the DVDs and the VHSs and all that stuff, the magazines. So ever since a kid, I had an affinity towards this character of Frank, and I kind of almost wished to or saw myself as a grown man being that type of character. He was a guy that you know, he had manners enough you could bring him home to mom, but there was a bad boy part of it too. And
Oh, yeah.
I think that that balance is something I always saw for myself as a grown man when I was a kid. So I've always been a huge fan. I've always been making songs and referencing Frank Sinatra and Sinatra lifestyle and drinking wine and pinky rings and all that stuff, even before I could drink wine. But so he's always been a part. And recently during the quarantine, I was like, man, you know, I'm a young man now. I want to do something that's, you know, outside of the recording industry. And I want to have, you know, a means of income and just something on the side that's really fun for me. That could eventually become something great. And so I was thinking of doing a review initially of doing a bunch of Sinatra songs, doing some Motown songs, and then talking to Mr. Jacobs. He was like, you know, Christopher, that'd be a great idea. He's like, you're, you know, a biracial Jewish young man in your, you know, in your early 20s. And he said, I think that's really unique that, you know, if you did a Sinatra show, it'd be doing Sinatra like no one's ever seen. It's this different perspective. It's this different, you know, young man doing it. So I think that really planted the seed for like, oh, that is true. You know, we should probably run with it. So me and him just sat and developed it. And, you know, I wrote the script and he helped obviously. And we just kind of, you know, put this together and had a team effort going, you know?
Well, all right. I'm sure that everybody listening is going to want to come and see it because I want to come and see it.
I'm sure.
So I just want to ask maybe one more question.
Okay.
When you think about this career, is there anything that you would say about what it means to you to be a performer, to be an entertainer, to be an artist, to be a creative person? Just what stands out about that for you?
Yes, that's a great question. I think the one thing that is consistent through everything about a career in the creative arts is that you are a servant. I think that's something that's forgotten a lot with artists, especially in today's time, especially with pop music now. It's almost like an industry that people think they can have an easy come up in, and it's almost like a thing where it's almost like people are joining the music industry or just creative world to make money because it's so lucrative if you do it right. But at the base of a successful creative act, whether that's music, acting, physical art, painting, sculpting, any of that type of stuff, it's really you serving people. And I think that that's something that I've always had to come back to, regardless of all of, my ambitions of being whoever I want to be or competing with some of my favorite artists. It's always about the kid that sees you, that gets inspired by what you're doing and then could become greater than you. Like that's really all it's about. It's not about you. It's not about the person doing it. I think that's the biggest takeaway that I can say about this career is that if you just remember that you're here to make people happy, you're here to evoke emotion that people haven't felt or haven't given themselves permission to feel. And once it gets about you, it's not really art. It's more so just maybe showing off, I think. But I think that's the biggest thing. And for whoever's listening who wants to do art and be in a career where you're being creative, you definitely should always go back to that. If you're not, if you're not serving and if you're not, sacrificing, maybe not sacrificing, but giving yourself to a point where people can get inspired. Mr. J always tells me it's like, that the audience doesn't care if you're in a bad mood. The audience doesn't care if you're sick. The audience doesn't care if you had a bad day today. They're there because your product and what you're selling is an escape for them. And that's what you provide. And that's, and I think that's a beautiful thing because not a lot of industries or professions give you the chance to do that. And that all ties back into that, elementary school thing. It really does change people's lives and it changes their mood. And it's really a superpower and it's not something to take lightly. So that's really what I'd say about it. I've forgotten that sentiment along the way sometimes, but your internal voice always brings you back, I feel like,
That's a great place to stop. That is terrific. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. And as I said, I'm looking forward to seeing it, and I'm sure that with this is a guiding principle, you'll not only be successful, but you'll be happy.
Well, thank you.
I'm happy to talk to you.